All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, I am answering your listener questions pertaining to the Falcons Week 4 game, as well as their upcoming Week 5 action.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many, many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today is another Q&A episode, as we do each week on this podcast, me sharing mostly my insights on what I saw in the All-22 from last week's game, but also answering many of your general questions about other things I'm seeing or think on the Falcons. Your opportunity to pick my brain directly. People submitted their questions as usual on Twitter at FalcFans and of course at Locked On Falcons, the show's Twitter handle, where it is most easy to send your questions if you want them answered on the podcast. People also submitted their questions on Facebook. Locked On Falcons is the name of the Facebook page, of course. And email is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at FalcFans.com, where the podcast is posted daily. So let's jump right into it. First question comes from Jay Halim on Twitter. He asks, was it me or was Beasley going against the left tackle and Tack going against the right tackle very productive, or better yet, more productive? It seems like Beasley usually lines up over the right tackle. Also, are we getting any push up the middle? The answer to your second question is yes, we got some push up the middle. Not a ton, largely due to the fact that Jarrett was limited. You're right. Tack predominantly lined up on the left side of the defensive line against the right side of the Bengals offensive line, and Beasley was on the opposite side. I thought it was nice of the Falcons to put their best pass rusher, which is Tack, against the Bengals' weakest link on their front, which was offensive tackle Bobby Hart. And they also kicked him inside to go against right guard Alex Redmond, who really struggled in this game. I think Tack's first sack was against Redmond playing inside. But looking at the data from Pro Football Focus, Tack had 31 snaps rushing the quarterback from the left side, only two from rushing on the right side, while Vic Beasley had three rushing from the left side and 33 rushing from the right side. And again, that's flipping it. The right side of the defensive line is the left side of the offensive line, so he's going up against the left tackle in that instance, Vic Beasley, I'm referring to. Our next question comes from at Matt Stars on Twitter. He asks, hey, when you watch All-22, can you check how open Hooper was in the end zone on third and goal, people making it sound like he was too careful? I'm assuming the he that you're referring to is Matt Ryan. Yes, Hooper was open. Yes, there was a window for Matt Ryan to throw to. He overthrew it. I think he was worried about the safety over the top, you know, potentially making a play on it, making an interception, and basically ending the Falcons' hopes of getting points in that situation, because they were up, like, what, 3 points at that, or 2 points at that point? It was 31 to 33 at that point, right? So I think the Falcons definitely wanted to come away with points, and maybe Matt Ryan was a little bit too conservative with his throw. There was an opportunity to fit it in there, but I don't necessarily blame him for you know, putting a little bit air, putting some air under that ball to basically put it in a situation where Hooper was the only guy that could catch it. He just put too much air into that. So, you know, as far as Matt Ryan being too careful, if that's a criticism of Matt Ryan at this point, like, yeah, that's a valid criticism. He's always been a little bit conservative, but that's part of the thing of being a smart quarterback as opposed to the sort of the Brett Favre, Patrick Mahomes, you know, whoever you want to call it, gunslinger type of mentality. That's never been Matt Ryan. That never will be Matt Ryan, and I think at this point in his career, you just sort of either learn to have accepted it, or, you know, you just live a miserable life hating the Falcons quarterback every Sunday, I guess, which is apparently a life that some people live. Next question comes from Justin Sandu at Justin201224 on Twitter. How did Brian Poole look at strong safety? I thought Poole was fine. He had three notable mistakes that certainly people will be very down on him, and probably more down on his play than I am. He had a blown coverage on the Eifert touchdown, that first one. He had a missed tackle on the big play to Mark Walton in the second quarter, and then he had the penalty for lowering his helmet late in the third quarter. Those plays certainly stand out, but I think other than those three plays, I thought he played reasonably well. particularly when you consider that was his first game starting at strong safety. He dabbled as a single high free safety for the Falcons during his rookie preseason and training camp. In addition to working as the slot corner that year, which he has primarily been, I thought he was pretty solid against the run. He led the team with run stops in terms of how I factor those in. So I'm not overly worried about Poole at strong safety. I think he deserves more opportunities. I think with more time, he'll play better and be more consistent. So I'm definitely not losing any sleep over what Brian Poole's doing. Corey Woodruff at Corey Woodruff 47 on Twitter says, "Do you know how to stop the night terrors?" I'm sorry, Gory, I do not know. DW the Drunk Ghost at Falcon DW, you guys in these Halloween Twitter names. Based on what you saw in the second half against the Bengals, are the Falcons better off sticking to mostly man coverage, or should they grow into the mix of man and zone? Yeah, I think it depends. Generally, I don't necessarily have a horse in the race when it comes to man versus zone. I remember this was sort of a thing back in 2016, early on, where people sort of insisting that the Falcons deploy more man coverage versus zone. And eventually the Falcons did wind up doing that, and it seemed to work out for them in the back half of that season. Generally, I try to refrain from, the team should do this versus that sort of mentality. Obviously, I have thoughts. Obviously, I have opinions. But I feel my job is less about this is what the team should do versus more about this is what the team is actually doing, and let's talk about the results and whether it's getting the results that we want, as opposed to, trying to outcoach the coaches. It's analyzing the coaching decisions more than trying to, the woulda, coulda, shoulda sort of thing. But to answer the question, I think there are reasons to play both. I think more man coverage is generally better suited to our cornerbacks. I think it allows them to be in better position to break up passes, especially when you factor in that our pass rush, or lack thereof, is not necessarily as capable of getting pressure on the quarterback with just four rushers, which is necessary when you're going to play zone and you're going to rush four and drop seven in the coverage. They didn't use zone very much in the second half in the Bengals game, but it was mostly effective when they did use it. The few instances they did, I counted about six pass plays where they utilized zone, and the Bengals only had success on one of those pass plays. But I think half of those successes for at least the defense, three out of those five were primarily due to the result of pressure up front, or at least the Falcons got pressure up front. And it resulted in positive gains for the defense. So, that's just more proof in the pudding that, the pass rush, pass rush, pass rush. We keep insisting on that. But you don't want to be exclusively one or the other. You want to mix it up. Certain situations where zone is more favorable, like red zone situations where it's longer down in distances, those sorts of situations, I think it makes perfect sense to lean towards zone. But any other time, I think, you might favor man, and it also depends on the quality of the opposing team. Do they have a quarterback that is going to scramble? Do they have wide receivers that aren't necessarily guys that you need to man up, like Carolina or whatnot? So all these different variables go play into it. So generally I would favor man, but it's not as if like they should only play man and never play zone, or minimize how much zone they should play. They play a healthy mix of both, in my opinion. That being said, we got more questions to answer later on the show. But if you listen to this podcast, then you're always listening to me answer a lot of things. But I don't have the answers to everything. And that often includes who's going to win, who's going to lose. But if you guys have those answers, then you want to check out my bookie. You guys got to remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. And that's why I always tell people to go to MyBookie. Trust me, they're the best bet that you'll make this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. Their mobile site is very easy to use. They have in-game live betting over, under, on fantasy points scored, and the most rewarding player perks in the business. MyBookie has been recently slammed with new bettors, and they want to help you guys out by giving you a $25 free play if you deposit $100 or more after 7 p.m. Eastern. Use the promo code LOCKEDON25 to activate that offer. go ahead, visit MyBookie today. That's MyBookie. And don't forget that promo code LOCKEDON25 to get an extra $25 after you deposit after 7 p.m. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, Truman Cobbledick at Mr. TJC4 Truman. How do they plan on getting pressure on Roethlisberger now that Grady is out? I don't know what they plan to do, but I know what I'm planning. I'm planning on them not getting any pressure. I don't think, you know, they will have as much success this week as they did in the third and fourth quarter creating pressure, because they're facing a significantly better offensive line than what the Bengals had. The Steelers have, you know, a legitimate top five offensive line, unlike the Falcons, who have a top five offensive line, but it doesn't really play like a top five offensive line a lot of times. So I have no idea. I mean, because it's basically the Tack McKinley show, and one good rusher is not good enough. And, you know, we'll see if Vic Beasley steps up. We'll see if Jack Crawford steps up. I mean, the good thing is Jack Crawford has played better the last two games. The good thing is Brooks Reed and Steven Means have improved. Terrell McClain's been better. So it's not as if, you know, the Falcons are devoid of players. It's just they're devoid of players that I would trust to beat the David DeCastros and the Ali Villanuevas and the Pouncies and the, you know, Marcus Gilberts or whoever else the Steelers have up front. So we'll have to see how that works out for them. The bag is secured at Free Train 24. How do you feel Oliver Olakun? I've been told that I pronounce Oluwakun wrong in Sanat, but I'm going to pronounce it the way I'm going to pronounce it. How do you feel? I'm sorry. How do you feel Oliver Oluwakun and Sanat are coming along four games into their rookie year? Anything stand out? Also, have you seen anything from Means in his limited snaps that makes you feel strongly he will or won't stick? I think the rookies are coming along fine. Oluwakun is light years better than what I thought he was, or what I thought he would be coming in to this team and into the season. I think it's only a matter of time before he leapfrogs Duke Riley as the regular weak side linebacker, particularly when Deion Jones comes back later in the season. Oliver has showed, you know, really good ability in run support and showed capable tackling this past Sunday. I think his awareness needs improvement. We saw two touchdowns that I attribute to him giving up because of poor awareness in zone, but sort of not doing his responsibilities. The Ross touchdown and the A.J. Green one at the end. And I also thought there was a couple of instances where his ball skills in terms of his awareness and man coverage weren't quite up to par either. But I think a lot of that is just, you know, being young and inexperienced and still struggling to process things, which, you know, you would expect with more time and more reps. And, you know, you can say Duke Riley is showing you right now that with more time and more reps, that stuff will, you know, get better. Sanat has been fine. He's not been as consistent as I would like as a run defender, but for the most part, he ranges from quote unquote fine to pretty good. So not anything too concerning there. As for Steven Means, I think he played better against Cincinnati. I think right now he's tending to rely a little bit too much on effort than necessary, having the sort of plan and moves and techniques that I saw regularly when he was with the Eagles over the last year or so. Maybe that's, you know, having jitters from being with a new team and not necessarily being as comfortable as he was in Philadelphia, but we'll have to see. But, you know, there was improvement from the New Orleans game to the Cincinnati game, and hopefully there'll be improvement from the Cincinnati game to the Steelers game. Okay, Rise Up Ryan KC asks, what defensive changes can the Falcons make to get a better result with the guys we have, and how many sacks does Tack end up with by the end of the year? I think they could play more man coverage. They could be more willing to dial up some blitzes to supplement their four-man rush. I think, you know, that can burn you, though. You know, that there was one swing pass to Gio Bernard where they brought a six-man pressure and they got burned for like a 24-yard gain or a 17-yard gain or something like that. But I thought, you know, one of the things I've noticed on film is there's been a couple of times where Manuel has done a really good job disguising his blitzes more so than in previous years where I thought the Falcons' blitzes were pretty vanilla and pretty basic and pretty obvious. As for Tack, you know, going into the season, I thought he would have around 8 sacks this year, in that 6 to 8 sack range. You know, now I might push that to 8 to 10 sacks. You know, one of the things I noticed going into the year was looking at some of the matchups, particularly looking at the left tackles and right tackles that the Falcons were expected to face, at least, you know, during training camp. Things have obviously changed due to injuries and guys winning certain competitions. But one of the things I noticed is that the quality of left tackles that the Falcons are facing in the first half of the season is less than the quality of right tackles. And then in the second half of the season, it kind of flips on them. And so when I was thinking that Vic Beasley was going to be lined up primarily against right tackles and Tack was going to be going up against left tackles going into the year, I somewhat expected a slower start for Vic going into the year due to the having facing a higher level of competition. And then that would sort of flip down the stretch. So that would be interesting to see if that continues or if the Falcons continue to put Tack against the lesser offensive tackle and also give him more reps as an interior rusher, particularly now if Grady Jarrett's missing extended time. So, you know, as far as how many sacks he winds up getting, you know, your guess is as good as mine. For the record, I could probably care less. Probably, I don't know. I'm not 100% certain if I could care less, but I could probably care less about whether Tack's, what his final sack number is. You know, I think part of the whole issue with in the predicament that we sort of fell in with Vic Beasley and sort of these, you know, the backlash to the backlash to the backlash, and I think we're now on the fourth backlash with Vic Beasley, is that people got way too caught up into that sort of singular number in terms of how many sacks he has and not really looking at other aspects and sort of defining him based off of that. And I think, you know, whether Tack gets 6 sacks or 16 sacks, it doesn't really matter to me. It's not that consequential. You know, I'd much rather have a guy that has 6 sacks and 80 pressures than a guy that has 16 sacks and 40 pressures. So that's sort of how I view it, but we'll have to see. And we'll have to see about some of these more questions because we got more coming your way. But don't you guys think it's crazy how much we pay for brand new name clothes? You know, you go out there, you buy kids clothes, and they're just going to outgrow them in a couple of months. Wouldn't it be great if there was a place out there that you could discover awesome discounts on gently used clothes? Well, guess what, guys? Now there is. That's Swap.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Stop driving from store to store sifting through racks when you can easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds on Swap.com with easy-to-use filters to find exactly what you need. With Swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price on your favorite brands like Lululemon, Carter's, Nike, J.Crew, Gap, and more. Quality hand-inspected items are added daily, and if something doesn't fit, you can enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. There's a special offer for our Locked On Falcons listeners by heading over to Swap.com where you guys can get a 35% discount on select items on your first order by using the promo code Locked On. You can also find new deals every day on Swap.com's homepage and again save 35% on your first order by using the promo code Locked On at SWAP.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Now, as someone who has covered the Falcons for many years, there's also a couple of rules that I like to live by, which generally revolve around things aren't as good as you think they are, nor are they as bad as you think. And I think that's one of the reasons why I really like what our newest partner, Loci, is offering. If you haven't heard that name before, now you have. Add a little game day swag now with Loci, because Loci has your back with their new game day bracelet collection. This is an amazing company. I've never been a huge bracelet guy, but I think that's going to change due to the amazing message that Loci has and their support of incredible causes. The Loci bracelet comes in all 32 teams' colors, holds water from Mount Everest, the highest point on Earth, and mud from the Dead Sea, the lowest point. And it's a daily reminder to keep that balance in your life between the highs and lows, a reminder that Falcon fans need now more than ever. This is an awesome message personally that keeps me focused during the good and bad times in my life, and now it can for you guys. Since Loci is a friend of the show, they are offering an exclusive discount of 25% off all game day collection bracelets. Trust me, guys, this is a great deal that you definitely want to take advantage of. Just use the promo code Falcons25 when checking out. Go to loci.com, that's Loki.com, and use the promo code Falcons25 to get 25% off any game day collection bracelet go ahead and take advantage of this amazing deal. Okay, Dean Sabrizi on Twitter asks, do you believe the Falcons should blitz more on third and fourth down? I feel like we could have stopped the Bengals and Saints more consistently if we were willing to blitz on those crucial passing downs. What say you? I think maybe you can make a case against the Saints. I'd have to go back and sift through my notes to definitively say yes or no. I don't think that was necessarily an issue against the Bengals. I think what hurt the Falcons more is just lack of discipline. You know, they had penalties that sort of, you know, killed them on a couple of drives. That pool penalty was really problematic. They had some, you know, defensive holding and interferences and whatnot on Alford and Trufant and whatnot. The unnecessary roughness on Trufant, just they keep popping into my head as I'm talking. I think there are also opportunities that they, you know, guys on the back end, Trufant infamously dropped that interception that would have sealed the win for the Falcons. I just think they didn't take advantage of the opportunities. I don't necessarily feel like they weren't in position to make plays. They just didn't take advantage of those. And I don't think blitzing would have changed that reality. You would have just had guys blitzing and, you know, I don't know, Andy Dalton lobbing throws over them or something like that. I don't know. Thomas Mo Ryan asks, my main question is, what do you think we can do to salvage the decimated defense? I don't know if there's anything else to add that hasn't already been said, such as more man coverage, blitzing more, adding, you know, going out there and getting more pass rushers. But to be honest with you, I don't think you really can salvage this defense. I think you're just going to have to be prepared to ride it out. And I said this during the summer, I think that this defense would go as far as the pass rush would take it. And that was in the context of whether this defense would be a quote-unquote true top-10 defense or would be a fake top-10 defense, I guess, is the opposite of that. But I don't think anything has really changed in that regard, obviously besides the injuries, but still, you're still heavily dependent on this pass rush doing all the heavy lifting and taking how far this quote-unquote decimated defense is going to go is going to be dependent on how far the pass rush is willing to take it. And right now, I'm not necessarily expecting that to be particularly far. But this past week gave me a little bit more optimism that maybe guys are starting to come into their own. But then you get the bad news that Grady Jarrett's out for potentially, you know, a couple of weeks. And so every step forward is two steps back, it seems like someone recently told me when it comes to being a Falcon fan. And in this case, that seems to be pretty true. Aaron Burke Lumley asks, what did the Falcons change to not suck so bad in the second half? Looked like, to me, a combination of playing more man coverage and actually getting some pressure on Dalton. What did you see watching the tape? Also, why can't they just stop giving the halfback 40 yards of cushion every pass play? Yes, to your first question, that's pretty much what happened. As for the running backs getting too much cushion, I think, you know, some of that is coverage bust, but I think a part of it is the result of playing cover three. And when you play cover three, you only have four underneath defenders, as opposed to if you were saying playing cover two, where you would have five or so. Cover three is sort of designed to not give up the deep ball, but it often comes at the expense of giving up a lot more underneath stuff. And that's why you see all this production from running backs in the passing game against the Falcons. It's because, you know, you live by a sword, you die by a sword, I guess, is the phrase I would use. I don't know if that actually applies, but you get what I'm saying. Like, there's in football, there's strengths and weaknesses to everything that you do. There's nothing that's perfect. And teams know how to exploit, you know, the strengths of this versus that. You know, ultimately, the only thing that can stop you from teams from exploiting you is just having superior players and knowing how to use those players. And that's really it. It's not necessarily schematically like anything you can really do, particularly when it comes to defense. Offensively, you know, the you're ahead of the curve offensively. You can be a lot more innovative offensively than you can defensively. But it is what it is. Our last question comes from Jeremy Pruitt. Do you think Sark's success on offense is contributed to the fact that he has no defense and has to be aggressive with play calls versus the Sark of last year? No, I don't think the issues on defense have really much to do. I haven't seen any real indication to draw those links between the defensive struggles to the offensive success. I think it's just a matter of Matt Ryan being a lot more comfortable with what the scheme is asking him to do, which is allowing him to look at other receivers that aren't named Julio Jones and to a lesser extent Mohamed Sanu, which was the case for the vast majority of last season. And when you're not comfortable what you need to be seeing when, you know, what the play is designed for and what you need to be seeing on that given play, I think there was a tendency for Matt Ryan to basically say, I don't know what Sark wants me to do on this play. I don't know what I'm supposed to be seeing from the defense. So I'm just going to wait until Julio Jones gets open and I'm going to throw him the ball. And I think that's was, you know, one of the main issues that you dealt with last year and to a lesser extent Sanu. That's why you saw a big spike in Sanu's production in target production last year. And now you're seeing a reduction in that this year, in large part due to, you know, my controversial belief that Sanu is a much better number three than he is a number two, which I'm sure Bengals fans would also agree with. But, you know, I'll just guess I'll be a Bengals fan and whatever. Anyway, so I'm trying to call me out of my Sanu slander. I was like, dude, like you can't call me out on a Sanu slander. You're never going to stop that. That's just, you're just going to have to learn to live with that, my friend. Multiple people have tried to call me out on Sanu slander this past week, and I'm just like, come on. You don't know. Anyway, I think Sark has also done a better job attacking coverages. You know, I think that's probably more attributed to his added experience. You know, some people want to attribute that maybe to Greg Knapp's influence. You know, I'm not in the building every day, so I'm not going to necessarily speculate on what has caused it. I'm just here to talk about the results, right? So I think the defense, you know, given the issues on the defense, I think you would assume then that Sark would be a little bit more conservative in that regard, especially in light of sort of previous instances where the Falcons, despite their defense collapsing in certain games, in certain significant games that you may or may not remember, or may and may not have blocked out of your head, that their defense was in the midst of a collapse and the offense remained aggressive. And it kind of burned them instead of taking the conservative run the ball three times and settle for the field goal that everybody and their mama was screaming at their TV for them to do. So I feel like the Falcons will not make that mistake if they necessarily feel like that's an issue that they have to deal with again this year, which you can certainly make a case they might have to deal with. And that's one of the reasons why over the last week I've sort of opined whether or not we will see a quote-unquote return to a more conservative sort of play calling that will be, you know, used to sort of mask some of the issues on the defense. Who knows? Maybe they remain aggressive. Who knows? But we'll have to see. Well, guys, that is it. I appreciate everybody for sending in their questions. And we'll be back tomorrow with a fan talk episode. Yeah, and then we'll be back Monday morning with a rapid reaction to whatever happens with the Steelers game. Hopefully it's a win. I don't know how to deal with the loss. I mean, we'll have to see. Because I sit here today like, well, if they lose, then they'll lose, and it'll be okay. But at the same time, if they lose in sort of disappointing fashion, it's going to be like, ugh. You know, it's more about the process than the result, I guess, for me. That's how I sort of view it now. But we'll have to see how it goes. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.